Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is another episode of our Euro Track mini-series with co-host Katie Scheid. We talk about happenings at Western States, Lavaredo, the Mont Blanc 90K, and the 80K Trail World Championships last month before looking ahead to some of the European runners towing the line at the Hard Rock 100 this coming week. Before we get started, though, this episode is brought to you by Rabbit and Features. An early partner, Kodiak Cakes, is back as well. Stoked to have them on board again. Head over to the Kodiak Cakes website. Get yourself a box of pancake mix for your post-Sunday long run breakfast feast tradition. And use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout for 15% off your order. For Rabbit and Features, if you're in the market for new apparel and socks, head over to their website and use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next orders there. With that, let's get started. All right, we are back with another episode of Eurotrack. I'm joined by co-host Katie Scheid to run down some of the relevant events of June and to look forward into July. Katie, how's it going?
Hey, Finn. I'm excited that I'm a co-host this time.
I'm excited too. And we were joking offline because I have a couple questions for you that could potentially turn this episode into an interview. I promise they'll be brief, and it all has to do with Western States. We were talking on the track at Placer High shortly after your race or the day after before the award ceremony, and I realized that there were a couple things that I'm just personally curious about that I didn't ask you there. And I think the first one is, will you return to this race in 2024? Why or why not?
I don't have an answer for that yet. Yeah, Megan asked me that in my Iron Far interview, and I feel pretty split 50-50 right now. So I think it will depend on a lot of things. I'm not totally sure. I would like to, but I also don't know if I want to pursue something else.
Yeah, because, I mean, you put a lot into it, right? Like, you ended up spending the better part of 2 months in the U.S. training for the race. Does that factor in to a lot of the decision, just the amount of sacrifice and time spent stateside to prepare for this race adequately?
Yeah, actually the 2 months in the US I would say were like maybe the least committing parts of the whole thing. I started I kind of started thinking about this like in September. So I did a lot less skiing this winter. I was like driving down to Nice way more than I normally would to run. Mm. I did the coastal challenge in Costa Rica. Then I did Eco Trail Paris, which is a flat 80K. And that was like normally at the time I'd be skiing. So I think you see the like 2 months I spent in the US because I wasn't at home, but I invested so much more than just those 2 months. So I have to think about if that's something I want to try to recreate, or if it's something where like now I did all of that and now I kind of have it in me and I have like kind of that confidence that I can approach this race maybe with like less than, I don't know, what was that, like 9 months of sort of thinking about it. Yeah. So maybe it's something where next year, yeah, I could like just in quotes do 2 months specifically. But yeah, something to think about.
It is interesting when you compare a race like Western States, perhaps, to a race like UTMB, and I could be off track here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it's interesting that a race like Western States, you know, might require you to be more of a one-dimensional athlete and to shut down or significantly reduce your ski season to feel ready for it, versus these more mountainous summer races where you can be a multi-sport athlete and you can be perhaps more well-rounded. Like, I guess I hadn't considered that prior to this conversation, that, you know, you do have to spend the vast majority of a calendar year being ready to peak for a race like Western States. That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's really the one-dimensional thing. For sure, like, Ski-Mo is more applicable to a race like Western States than a race like UTMB than Western States. But I think it's also just that it's 2 months later, so you have that much more time to get back to running. A lot of the bigger like partner ski races are mid-March to end of April. So that would only be 2 months before Western States, whereas that's 4 months before UTMB. So it gives you a little more time to get back to running.
last question, I promise you, and then we can get into the bulk of the episode. At this stage in your career, what do you value most when it comes to determining your annual race schedule?
I think it's just whatever motivates me the most. It's whatever I'm like thinking about and I'm like, wow, I really want to do that. And then I just quickly start, you know, Google searching, I don't know, like Airbnbs or the race course or, you know, what a different place is like. As soon as you start finding yourself doing that, that's the signal to me like, okay, this is something I really want to do.
So it's not like surveying all of the quote unquote most important races in the sport and being like, okay, I just won UTMB. So now I have like quote unquote have to win Western States. I have to, you know, do Leadville, Hard Rock, all that kind of stuff. Like it's what you're saying is it's not about, you know, ticking off all of the check marks on this like have to do list for someone of your caliber.
No, I would say it starts there. And then it's like, okay, which one motivates me the most? I would say the like motivation begins at like the level of competition and like the level of notoriety of a race. And then after that, it's more like, okay, which one excites me the most right now? And so yeah, when I got the ticket for Western States, it was when it was offered to me, I was immediately like start thinking, okay, it would be so cool to go to Flagstaff and train there. And it would be so cool to be in the US. And that just signaled to me like I should definitely do this because I'm already really motivated.
I was just talking with Brett Hornig, our other co-host. We did a Western States recap episode, and one of the interesting stats that we took from all the results was that at least 45% of the field, 50% if we're going to consider you to be an international runner, made up the men's and women's top 10 at last Saturday's race. And we theorize that we can chalk this up to more international golden ticket races and international runners being excited to take these opportunities to run Western. Would you say that that is the case? Like when you talk to your colleagues, other runners in the French scene and beyond across Europe, do you find that like there is an excitement to take these opportunities to run Western? Like what are your thoughts there on why international runners made up such a significant portion of the overall top 10s?
I think the idea of the international golden tickets could make sense, but just thinking quickly, like Janos got his ticket at a US race, and then the rest of us, and Ida also got it at a US race, and then the rest of us got it at UTMB or had a ticket from Western States last year. So I'm not sure if it's really like the international tickets. Maybe it'll help now that there's going to be more in Europe. But I mean, for me, it just signals that there's more money coming into the sport because it's a huge financial investment to fly like in either direction, either for an American to come to UTMB or someone in Europe to come to Western States. Like you have to rent a place to live. You have to rent a car. You don't know anyone there. So you need support on the ground. And if you don't have any of that, you're probably not going to go. And I think this is just, you see athletes with higher levels of support being able to make that investment or just make a smaller investment because they know that, you know, if they're on the Hoka team, like there's a huge Hoka support network when they get there and can help them manage, you know, speaking English if they don't speak English super well. We had Shen from the North Face team who was in California, and
yeah,
he was with someone he was with like his wife and also a TNF manager from China who was translating for him. So you need that support if you're an international athlete, and that's something that's more and more available.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I in preparing for our preview episode for Western States, I checked out Shen's Strava, and he, similar to you, spent a considerable amount of time on the course in the lead up. I mean, I think he covered almost every mile, maybe a few miles, you know, uncovered in the high country, but that does seem to be a huge difference maker. I'm not sure if that's a new thing. Maybe you can comment on it with the North Face and these other, you know, brand sponsors for athletes, but perhaps it is a relatively new phenomenon that with races like Western States and UTMB, it's sort of a given that sponsors will make a lot of room for you to go over there, get an Airbnb, train specifically on the course for quite a bit. Like, did you feel like you had that support for example, in your case, going to Flagstaff and setting up shop and spending 2 months here?
I think it varies. I can't answer that question super well, but yeah, it depends on your sponsor and how they're willing to support you. Whether that's just like a place to stay race week, or if that means like, in Shen's case, he had like a manager from the Asian continent group with him. I'm not exactly sure what the setup was there, because we are kind of divided between continents and support. So yeah, I mean, for sure, if you're like a French runner and you know that there's going to be, for example, like, let's just say Solomon, I mean, their athlete manager is French and he's going to be there. And like, you know, Marianne Hogan speaks French and English. She's going to be there. Even if you're not super confident in English and you know that you're going to be around other French people, that's like way more settling than just showing up in a foreign country where you don't, maybe you can speak the language, but it still doesn't feel as comfortable. And yeah, just knowing that there's people on the ground who know the race, who know where the aid stations are. Maybe if you haven't spent enough time on the course, like you can trust the people around you have. And for me, that was really important that I had the Gaylords crewing and pacing me, because I knew that like they weren't going to miss an aid station, you know, like that was not part of any of my worry. That was like the bottom of the list of things I was worried about. And that's really important when you're on the start line of such a long race.
One of the things that I've really enjoyed preparing for these episodes with you is just getting to more closely follow the social media of some of these European runners. One of them being Mathieu Blanchard, who I was really excited about, by the way, heading into this race. I think he had one of the greatest performances of all time, almost outdueling Killian at UTMB last year. But bringing up his name because last night I was on Instagram, checked out his social media, and there's this one reel he made where he's in and out of the Robinson Flat aid station at Western, you know, last week, and kind of makes an interesting statement. He says, in France, crewing on trail races is debated, and in the United States, it's cultural, in all caps. And I'm wondering if you can help me translate that. Like, what does he mean when he says that the crewing experience over in Europe is debated, which is an interesting word choice, versus cultural here in the US? It was just something that I came across, and it caught my eye, and I was fascinated because I didn't quite understand what he was saying there.
I'm not 100% sure what he's getting after there. I mean, for sure, crewing in the US is like way more of a thing than in European racing, but that's mostly just because at most European races, you're like pretty limited to the number of people who can be crewing, and like it's in a closed space. It's really like sterile, kind of. Like if you picture UTMB, you have like one person inside a gym that like nobody can access unless they have paid for like a media pass or something. And even then they're behind a barrier. So you really have like your space, you have one person. And I mean, the origin of that is because there's just so many more people at these events that if all 2,000 runners at UTMB had five people crewing for them, that becomes a lot to manage at an aid station. So yeah, in Europe, we're used to only just having one person. Obviously some races don't have that rule, but like the bigger events do. And yeah, for sure. Like someone commented on, if you look in the reels, someone commented like, oh, this is just like French people like to complain about everything. That's what you mean by debated, which in some ways is pretty true. Like, yeah, I mean, it's a stereotype, of course, like everyone in every country complains about something, but the French have a reputation for complaining, which I don't know. It depends who you are. And that's like another debate, but yeah, I know it's been brought up a little bit around some of these events, because this is arguably maybe one of the biggest environmental impacts of an event is just the crew driving around. And maybe that's what he's referring to. I don't know where he saw this debate, but
I got to say, so we will link to this video in the show notes, in part because I just think it's an interesting topic to discuss, you know, demonstrating the differences between the European and American ultra trail scenes. But the comment section is pretty gold. So, you know, Mathieu is 30 plus miles into a 100-mile race, and you know, it's a pit stop. He's in, he's out, and there's a lot of collaboration around him. And there is this, just to illustrate one, what I thought was a funny comment, there's someone that says, "This is how I should be treated after a day of doing the bare minimum," which I don't know, that just cracked me up. A lot of funny comments in here. We'll link to that in the show notes. Before we get on to recapping a bit of the 80K World Trail Running Championships, is there anything else that you found interesting about the results from Western States, particularly on the international front? So like performances from Mathieu or Janusz or Ida or Esther, anything else we should cover before we move on?
Generally, everyone seemed to have done really well, like at the race. There's a lot of fast times, and I think that just shows how the sport's evolving. Esther, I was like particularly impressed with when I finished, and then someone told me I don't know how far she was behind, like only 20 or 30 minutes behind me. And like at some point in the race, the group behind me had been like an hour or something. And I was like, oh my God, wow, it's good I ran fast at the end, because she was closing really hard. And yeah, I think something interesting about like a race like Western States and international athletes, in the same way that UTMB maybe doesn't highlight the same American athletes as would maybe do well in an American race. I'm not sure how to word this, but yeah, Esther had like a great race at UTMB last year, but I think maybe this kind of race suits her even better. And she doesn't live in Europe. She lives in Hong Kong, but she's still doing more of like the European racing than the American racing. And I think sometimes some of these athletes in Europe who maybe are better suited for like these, I'm going to say American style, like faster, less technical races, they like their skill set isn't highlighted as well in the Alps. So it's interesting to see them, you know, maybe excel more than we would more than you might think from a result in the Alps, in the same way that an American who can maybe like win Western States, like, you know, with a super fast time might not translate as well to UTMB. So yeah, there's some of this like crossover where I think it allows different athletes to kind of showcase their best skills.
Well, we are about a month removed from the 80K Trail Running World Championships over in Innsbruck, Austria. I know I was sort of glued to the live stream for that. I found it very exciting. Anytime we can combine trail running with the team element of sports that we see in other arenas like football, baseball, basketball, I get super excited. And I think it met a lot of my expectations, other folks' expectations. Because we did do a recap on this about a month ago, there's just a couple of questions and comments that I had for you. The first, centering around the French team, I noticed that there in recent years has been a fair bit of continuity in terms of the structure of the team, the people that represent France. Whereas, for example, on the American team, there are a fair bit of shakeups. So you just see different compositions year in, year out more so. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that. Does it have to do with, for example, just the qualification process? Like in the US, we have our own sort of version of a golden ticket type thing, where like the top two at certain races get auto qualifiers versus sort of a resume process. Like, do you have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that you see with the French team, which is pretty obvious if you follow any of those athletes, is that the French Federation puts money into this. So these athletes are like very well supported. They have training camps throughout the year. They were on the course doing like a big training camp, I don't know, a month or 5 weeks before the race. So they'd all seen the race, they'd all run together, they'd all talked about the race, you know. And I mean, I can like divulge into how this is the same in Schemo, but it's really different when a country federation is paying for all of your expenses to be somewhere, as opposed to like you paying all of your expenses. And I don't know how well the US team is supported. I've never been on it, but knowing how the French team is supported, yeah, I think it just gives them a little bit more motivation to be on it, because you feel truly part of something that's like working together. And I think they feel a little bit more, I mean, I don't know, this is just like my personal take on it, but I do feel like they are pretty, they feel like they're really representing their country, because they are, because, you know, if you really go to the root of it, like the country's taxes are paying for them to do this. And that's really neat that they get to really feel the weight of, you know, their their country and their team. And that's, I think that puts them in a slightly different position than other teams who maybe don't have as much support. The selection process is a little bit, it's changed a little bit in past years because they changed the coach. I think Adrian, so we'll actually get into this because Annelise, who's running Hard Rock, her husband is the coach of the French team. And I think he started 2 years ago and he's changed it up a little bit. He coaches quite a few athletes. I think he actually coaches a good portion of the athletes in the team. And the selection is usually in March or late spring. So I will say that does kind of filter out most of the athletes who ski in the winter. So you will notice that most of the athletes in the French team don't ski because the selection used to always be in March at the Ventoux, which is kind of a famous early season French race. It's a 50K. They did a different event this year for the selection. But yeah, it's usually too early in the season for someone who does a full ski-mo career. So like someone who's really in the French ski-mo team, it's not really possible for them to be in the trail running team.
These are great insights. And just to compare and contrast, and this is just from what I understand about the American team, the selection process this year, out of necessity to some extent, was pretty last minute. So there were at least, I think it was 4 or 5 runners, maybe more, that didn't even know they were going to be a part of the team until after Lake Sonoma, like 7 weeks before the race. So that's interesting. I do believe from a compensation standpoint, travel to the race is covered, jerseys are covered, accommodations are covered, at least for the individual athlete. I don't think for the rest of the family. So there is some support. But like you mentioned a couple things with the French team, like they have a coach. There does appear to be some year-round work together. Well ahead of the race, they went ahead and previewed the course at Innsbruck and got to know it intimately. That's pretty awesome. I don't know if things are going to change for the American team now that we have a 2-year runway before the next World Championships, which I believe takes place in the Pyrenees in September 2025. But that seems to be a pretty awesome model standard. Also interesting that this does preclude some athletes that do want to have a ski season though from being a part of the team. And I guess I'm curious. I mean, you can comment on any of what I just said, but I'm also curious, do you feel like this team is hamstrung, that there are a lot of great athletes, perhaps for example your partner Germain, who might not be a part of the team because they value other sports?
I would say they have a pretty good portion of the strongest runners in France. Definitely some. Yeah, I think the only thing with like these world championship events is it doesn't give as much visibility to your sponsors. So people who are pretty focused on truly being professional have a harder time committing to this type of event because, like, especially in the French team, they do have so many like training camps together that they need to go to. So if you're preparing your own event, it's a little bit harder to make it work. To like, for example, like Camille Brias she's never been on the French team, but she also skis all winter, so that could be part of it. But she's very much like invested in what Solomon wants her to do and what she wants to do. So I don't know if that's part of the reason. So in the past they were using like a singular qualification race, and I know that Adrian has been trying to use more just like races that people are already at to be indicators of whether or not they can be in the team. And then he'll kind of like invite people based on that criteria, like based on just kind of how he sees the race. I mean, he's been around the sport for a really long time, so he has a good sense. I'm not sure, like that's debatable if it's fair or not, but yeah, they definitely like, I think they do a pretty good job getting like pretty high level, like very high level athletes. Obviously, both the men's and women's winner of the 80K were French. And yeah, you can't, like, of course you can't, it's hard to first predict who's going to be in the best shape at the time of the race and then get people who are like, I think they care that people are really committed to being in the team. And I think that shows in their results that And when you see pictures of them, like, they're really, you know, into the team atmosphere. It's not just individuals.
Going through just a few of the French team members, a couple I'm familiar with, Thibaut Garrivier, Audrey Tanguy. Not as familiar with Benjamin Rubial, Baptiste Chassang. Again, I apologize if I mispronounce any of these names. Manon Caillé, Marion Delespierre. Can you shed light on any of these runners that an American audience might be slightly unfamiliar with that you've gotten to know over the years? Like, I know you ran for On for many years, so you might know Marion a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know everyone except Benjamin. I don't know him very well. I actually really don't know him at all. But yeah, I know Marion. We ran together. I mean, we were both with On. She's still with On. She's a doctor in Lyon, and she's been strong for a long time. And this was kind of like her, I would say this is definitely like her, definitely the biggest result she's had so far. She had a great race at UTMB in 2021. She was fourth in like a very fast time. And yeah, I think that showed, like, when she did that, I think that really showed that she did have these like big performances in her. Audrey, I also know very well. I haven't seen her much in the last couple of years, but we were pretty good friends doing a lot of the same races a few years ago. And Manon is a little bit more up and coming. She won TDS in 2021, I think. Her dad has been around the sport for a long time. So for example, like at the Mute, which she won this spring, her dad was also, I think he was in the top, I would have to go back and look at the results. He was at least in the top 15 then. He might've been in the top 10, but he's in his 50s, I want to say, maybe even approaching 60. And he's also a Hoka runner. They're both Hoka. So I think that's pretty cool that like her dad is also up there at the same events. Baptiste is also a younger runner. But he's had some good results. I think he did Trans Gran Canaria a year or two ago. He kind of had a crazy race at the 80K. He went out super crazy fast, but I think he's still like learning some pacing strategies, but he's got a lot of potential ahead of him. And who else? Oh, Thibaut Garrivier. Yeah. He is also super strong. He's also a doctor. So some high performing individuals outside of running too.
Yeah, I remember being at the finish line for UTMB. I've told this story before, but I was at the finish line of UTMB last year, and Thibaut had one of the most impressive finishes. I think he ran 85% of the race on no calories. I don't know how that's possible, but he did it. And he crossed the finish line and promptly just like laid down for 30 minutes, it was 30 some odd minutes, and you know, was attended to by medical folks. And I've just never seen somebody like with that type of story finish that race that depleted and still in the top 10. He's incredible.
Yeah. He had some, I forget, I'm losing track of the years, but he won Transvolcania, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, he's had some really good results in the past. I think he was injured a little bit over the last couple of years, but yeah, it was good to see his name again.
One more thanks to HVMN for supporting this episode. Lately, I've been using HVMN's Ketone IQ product during long runs and right after big efforts. I find that during long runs, taking a shot of Ketone IQ maintains my mental clarity and focus. And when I take a shot post-run, especially in the midst of consecutive big weeks of training, I find that it expedites recovery. So if you're interested in giving it a try yourself, head to hvmn.com/singletrack20. If you use that link, you'll save 30% off your order if you become a subscriber, or you can use our old code singletrack20 for 20% off at checkout if you just are choosing a one-time purchase. With that, let's get back to the conversation. Moving on to the Lavaredo 120K, which took place on the same day as Western States, I have a lot of questions for you here. The first is just talking a bit about the host city, Cortina d'Ampezzo, which I understand is hosting the Winter Olympics in 2026, but you've run this race before. You got second place back in 2021. So talk for a moment about the community involvement in the race, what the ambiance is like, what that town is like, and yeah, and I guess maybe what the course is like too.
Yeah, I would. I mean, the best way to describe it is kind of like a mini UTMB. I mean, mini, it's not that much, 50K shorter, but just like the whole feel of everything feels like UTMB, but just like turned down a few notches, like in a more digestible format. Yeah, the Italians love sports just in general. And this, yeah, the 11 p.m. start is strictly so that the Italians will all be out on the street like partying when you start. And that's cool for the ambiance, not so great for, I mean, I personally don't like starting at 11 because then you spend the whole day just like wondering when to eat and when to nap and everything. But yeah, it gives it a cool feel at the start because there are quite a few people in the streets. You know, it's still Italian dinner time, so they're just out there at the bars cheering. So that's pretty fun. And then, I mean, after that, you actually, there aren't that many people on the course. More than Western states, I guess, but it's not like you're running through hordes of people for that long.
Okay.
Yeah, generally the race just has a great feel. I really enjoyed it. I would love to go back someday.
And then how about the course too? Because I was looking at historical results. You had a second place finish there. It seems like other Americans have had success there in recent years. Hayden Hawks won the race in 2018. Tim Tollefson won it in 2019. Other than the fact that, you know, all of you are united by the fact that you're talented runners, do you suspect there are any particular reasons why there's been some amount of American success there? Is it because the course is more runnable? It's less of a mountain race? Like any reasons that might be the case?
Yeah, I think it's mostly that. It's way less of a mountain race. You're on a lot of dirt roads. I'm not saying those are flat dirt roads. There is like a pretty long flat dirt road section in the middle, but there are quite a few like access ski resort roads. So it's something that is just, yeah, I think it just favors people who are like good at running and running uphill because you can run a lot of the uphills as opposed to like needing to hike. And yeah, I think it works. I think it can just kind of favor someone with a stronger running background for sure.
This is something I've heard from multiple Americans that have been at races like Lavaredo. And I think they were talking about Lavaredo specifically. And I'm wondering if you can corroborate this or if this is just myth. But one runner I was talking to in particular said, you know, I've been to Western states, I've been to Lavaredo. And in the first couple miles of Western states, it's very much a reunion type atmosphere where I'm chit-chatting with all the runners and it's light and, you know, we're joking, catching up. And then I went and did Lavaredo and there was just dead silence in the first, you know, few miles. And it was like heavy breathing and people were just immediately competing. Is that a feature of races like Lavaredo? It's just cultural where as soon as the gun goes off, it's just like we're on a mission. What can you say there?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely more like chit chat among Americans just in life in general than in Europe. But
life in general.
I also think it's just, there's just a little bit more like needing to fill dead space, which I like sometimes. It's like nice to just chit chat for no reason. But culturally, I think there's a bit less of that in Europe. And like specifically to Lavaredo, I would say I don't remember talking in the beginning because there's so many people and it's dark and like people have poles out and like you're just trying not to like trip on someone. You know, everyone has their headlamps. It's not really like an atmosphere where you want to just have a chat because you're just trying to, you know, stay in your bubble and not fall over. Yeah, I think the races that start on these, because it also starts pretty flat. You're like on the road for a few kilometers before you cut into a like kind of a dirt road and then a trail. And it's the same at UTMB. Like it starts flat on a dirt road. And so you're running a lot faster than you would at like Western states where it starts immediately uphill. Like immediately at Western states, you're hiking or jogging pretty slowly uphill. So I think it's just more conducive to chatting than when you're, you know, running way too fast down the road, trying not to get trampled by other people.
I was looking at the winning times, the podium results from this year's race, and then I was comparing it just to years past. You got second at this race in 2021, but if you had taken your result from 2021 and placed it into this 2023 race, you would have won the race by roughly 30 minutes. And I'm wondering if there's like, has the course changed at all? Is the race maybe not as competitive this year due to being diluted by the World Championships and other close by UTMB races? What are your thoughts there?
I think there's a few factors. Yeah, for sure. The World Champs took a lot of the European runners. And then it's, yeah, Lavaredo is the same weekend as Western States and the 90K Dumont Blanc. So that also dilutes things a little bit. I don't know what the course conditions were like this year. If there was like, maybe there was snow in places or not snow in places where we had snow. So that can really change things. Also the temperature, I don't know if it was hot or cold or what was going on. Fiona, who won, is a very strong runner. So I don't think, yeah, there's nothing to take away from her performance there. I will also say the year that I did it, Camille Bria set the course record. So
okay.
It was a fact. And we were running together most of the race, like really together. And I think that always helps bring up the finishing time is when you're really like with another girl. It's not that often that the girls are running together. Like, so I think there's a few factors there that helped both bring our times up and maybe there was just more spacing in the girls and they didn't have as much pressure to push it, or maybe there was snow or maybe it was hot. I didn't really look into the details.
So men's podium results, Jonas Rusi in first, Robert Hajnal second, George Piazza third. You mentioned Fiona taking the win on the women's side, Marie-Line Nakache in second, Emma Stewart in third. Anything more you can say about Fiona or Marie-Line or anyone else in the race that had a notable result in terms of their background and whatnot?
Yeah, I know the girls better than the guys. I mean, I know of Robert from when he was second or third at UTMB a few years ago. Fiona, yeah. She lives not that far from here as the crow flies. I've raced her before. She does quite a bit of skiing in the winter. And yeah, she's really like a mountain person. I mean, I have like only nice things to say about her. She's a really strong athlete. And Marilyn is also from the same area, but the other direction. And yeah, I actually did the Eco Trail Paris with Marilyn. She's always present at a ton of races. She just won Marathon du Sable a few months ago. So she's got a lot of experience. And I think this was her first Lavaredo. I would have to double check with her. But something interesting about Marilyn is that she lives in her California van. So that's pretty cool.
California van.
Oh, I guess in the Super U.S. cool. It's called a Eurovan, but in Europe it's called a California. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. Is the van life equally popular in Europe? Do you see athletes like Marilyn doing this? Because I know, you know, even being at Western States last weekend, you go into that Olympic Valley parking lot and every other car is a Ford Econoline, a Dodge Sprinter, souped up. It's got, you know, a Starlink on the top of it. It's got, you know, water heater, solar panels, all that kind of stuff. Like, is that equally as popular a lifestyle route on the European scene?
Not so much for living, because we don't have, like, you can't, if you had a vehicle as big as a Sprinter van, you wouldn't be able to park it anywhere. Most parking lots, even if they're outdoor parking lots, have like an entry barrier at 1.9 meters. And the California van is like 1.8 and a half, so that's the only van you can like park normally. So yeah, you don't see the vehicles that big. You wouldn't be able to, I mean, even if there was no parking barrier, you wouldn't be able to fit it anywhere. Yeah, so I would say it's more a like weekend vehicle. So it is pretty unique that Marilyn actually lives in hers.
Before we talk about the Marathon du Mont Blanc, the 90K, I wanted to bring up an interesting question. So Dylan Bowman had a tweet about a year ago, and then he resurrected it last weekend because it was still relevant. And he talks about how he thinks having Lavaredo, Western States, and Marathon du Mont Blanc on the same weekend is bad for the sport. He thinks that it dilutes media coverage, it dilutes fan interest. And he thinks that, you know, if we could spread out those three races on independent weekends, it would be better. I'm curious, what are your thoughts there? And because like one of the first things that I think about is if we did spread out those three races, would we necessarily see the fans that are primarily interested in Lavaredo tune in to Western States if they had a free weekend? Or is it the case that all three of these races operate in their own bubbles to begin with, and they're not really taking attention away from each other? Like, how do you think about that?
I think that's tough because, yeah, Lavaredo and Marathon du Mont Blanc have always been on the same weekend. I guess maybe in the past they've been one after the other before, but even then you can't, like, it's always been, you have to choose one. And I do think they attract slightly different athletes. The 90K is a lot steeper. I think it has the same climbing as Lavaredo, but is 30K shorter. So it's a very different race, and they're different communities, you know, like Cortina versus Chamonix. It's like a different center of running. And then for sure, Western States is like on another continent. So you don't have as many of the same people following. Yeah, for sure. If they were on different weekends, you could like, the media coverage would be more, you could have more media coverage on each event. But I don't feel like any of them are really in the same niche. I mean, we're already in a niche sport, right? But it's still like, you know, it's not Lavaredo and UTMB the same weekend. It's, they are all a little bit different. I would say the Europeans have a little bit more trouble following Western States live and more look at the results after, because it is only in English. Whereas the, I guess Lavaredo probably had live coverage because it's by UTMB now. But when it's a by UTMB race and has live coverage, there's at least like French, English, and Spanish. And then I guess in this case, they would probably have Italian too. And that makes it easier to tune in, you know, just for like 10 minutes at a time. Whereas if a French person was to tune into Western States just for 10 minutes and maybe didn't understand English, like maybe their English was like mediocre, they're probably not going to watch it for that long and be like a little lost because they can't just like quickly catch up on what's happening.
Gosh, that is such a great point. I totally overlooked the fact that there really isn't much of an infrastructure for a non-American person to consume Western States. And that is one of the good things that UTMB does. I know they also had it at the Trail World Championships this year where the live stream was broadcast in multiple languages. And now I'm wondering when will we see the first year of Western States being broadcast in also French and Spanish, Italian, et cetera. It's very interesting to think about, but I think until then, I think you're right. Like there might not be too much of an overlap until there is like a proper consumption opportunity for, you know, someone that is a native Italian speaker, for example.
Yeah. And the other thing about Western States, there's so many of these like little rules that I didn't even know until I was doing the race. Like the fact that, you know, anyone can run with you from the river to Green Gate. You know, people are asking me like, but why did you have, you know, 8 pacers in this picture, but in this picture you have 1, and in this picture you have 0. And then you have like 100 people running down this road with you here. And you're like, okay, then you're trying to explain like, well, you know, this part they can run with you, but so there's a lot of things that don't come across outside of this like Western States bubble that I think could be interesting to explain more.
Talking more about Marathon du Mont Blanc, I think we have a fair bit to talk about here. Your partner Germain won the race, but before we talk about that, I've always been curious because I don't know much about this race. What parts of this course overlap with the UTMB races in September? Walk us through where it starts, where it finishes, and where and if there is any overlap with the greater UTMB courses that I think American audiences are more familiar with.
Yeah, so the overlap is almost zero. They do, in the 90K, you do one climb that is the descent, that is a descent in UTMB, and that's it. Otherwise, it's completely different. So, wow. I mean, it's probably not worth me like walking through everything because unless, oh no, I guess you do, you also do the final traverse of UTMB when you go up to Tête de Vent and kind of traverse along this like rocky trail to La Flagère. That is, they do that in reverse in the 90K. So there's nothing that's done in the same direction. basically. But I mean, I think unless you really know Chamonix super well, it's probably not worth me explaining. But you basically do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 climbs, 5 big climbs up and down the sides of the valley. And you make this big loop through the valley. And it's basically just going up, going down, gotcha. Going up, going down, more or less 5 times.
So men's podium results, Germain won the race, Louison Coiffet and Hugo Deck second and third. Women's podium, Jennifer Lemoine, Lucy Jasmine, Laura Van Vooren first, second, and third. Anything, do you want to go into detail about any of these particular races, like maybe starting with Germain, walking through any interesting points of the race, anything he relayed about the competition, critical points in the race, where he made moves to win, stuff like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway from this race, well, two things, is like these times are super fast compared if you look at past versions of the race. In 2021, I think it was, the course was not the same. It was shortened for COVID reasons. They couldn't like go to Switzerland and all this. But anyway, if you look at the other results from other years, like back, so Jarmo and I both did it in 2019 and the years before that also, the times this year were like an hour faster than the winning time. No, Jarmo's time was an hour faster than his third place time from 2019. But I think they were all like under the winning time from 2019, which was Xavier Thévenard. And it was slightly longer this year. There was a few little extra climbs, like little extra pieces on top of the climbs. So thinking that it's slightly longer and they were that much faster, I think it just shows how fast this sport is evolving, especially because the two French guys behind him, Hugo and Louison, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. They're quite young. Like, I think that was Louison's like first ultra. Yeah. And wow. Hugo has a little bit more ultra experience, but not that much. He won the 100-mile at Nice by UTMB last year, but otherwise he doesn't have that much ultra experience. And they were very close to Jarmo. And I think Jarmo was mostly impressed just like at how strong they were and the fact that they could like pull off such a great performance in one of their first ultras. And considering the time in general, like compared to other years, you know, in any other year, either one of them would have won.
Yeah, that's wild to me that they took an hour off that 2019 time, for example. And especially when you think about the winner of that men's race, Xavier Thévenard, who is an absolute legend. I suppose, you know, a 90K race is different from a 100-mile race and he has different skill sets, but that's still very impressive to me.
Yeah, I couldn't really believe it when I saw the time, the finishing time, just knowing the race from the other years. Yeah, it was.
And a longer course.
Yeah, I was thinking, oh, they cut out a climb somewhere or something, but actually, no. I will. The only disclaimer is that it was 100 degrees in Chamonix in 2019. So you can like add some fluff time there for that. But the way that Jarmel described it is actually he felt that the race was kind of in slower conditions because there was a lot of snow at the beginning that he said slowed down the race. He did his first climb a lot slower than the same climb in 2019. And then the rest he did way faster. So the beginning was slower, but then it wasn't 100 degrees after. So give or take.
Let's talk just a bit about the women's race too, before we get on to our final topic, which is Hard Rock. Anything you want to say about the podium, Jennifer, Lucy, or Laura?
I don't know Jennifer, so unfortunately can't comment on that. She must be really strong. I actually didn't even like look up her name yet. I know Lucy. Lucy's had she has quite a bit of experience in the sport. She also had a top 10 at UTMB in 2021. She's a lieutenant in the French Army. She used to always be on the French team, but hasn't been in quite a few years. But yeah, she was also third at the Mute in the spring. So she's had a good spring. And so, yeah, I imagine Jennifer is quite strong if she was finishing in front of Lucy. But yeah, she would be someone to watch. I don't know what the rest of her schedule is looking like for this year.
Final topic here, the Hard Rock 100. And there's a lot we could say about this race, but for the sake of this episode, we can just talk about a few of the European runners that are towing the line. I know we had some back and forth on Instagram about some of the content we were seeing from runners like Aurelien, which we can get into in detail. I had a good laugh there. But the first person that I want to talk about is Claire Banworth. I was just going through her results just in 2023 alone. I have to read this off to you. She did a 275 kilometer race in February, first place, a 320 kilometer race in March, first place, the winter spine race in the UK, first place, seventh place at the 2023 Trans Gran Canaria. So, you know, I'm sure there's a bit of a caveat, like, you know, not all these races are delivering the highest level of competition, but just the fact that she can put together that much volume in the first half of 2023 and be pretty consistent is amazing to me. And that's all before Hard Rock this year. She's also pretty funny on Instagram. Like, there's this post that she made maybe a day or two ago. It's this like rabbit. It's a rabbit. Like, you have to, I'll send you the link. It's a rabbit and it's like kind of looking fierce. And it's in, the description is, on my way to the US, the burgers are waiting for me. So she's got some humor too. Anything you want to add about Claire? And I guess the question I have is, like, is she ready for this race? Like, is she burnt out yet? I want to know if she's burnt out yet, because she's just been prolific.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard her name before, because she's sort of, I would describe her as like a consumer of ultras. She does a lot of races, and yeah, I like, power to her. Like, if she, that's something she, I think she just really likes doing different races, and likes trying new challenges, and she definitely does a lot of them. So she's, I forget, how old is she? I don't know if you had her age, but I think she's,
oh gosh, I'll pull this up.
But she's been around a little while. She definitely has a lot of experience, so that's not something she'll be lacking. And yeah, I think
34.
Oh, okay. But yeah, she's done pretty well at like some of the super long stuff. That seems to be something that suits her pretty well. So yeah, we'll see for Hard Rock. I don't know. I think a lot of Hard Rock is going to depend on how well adjusted people are to the altitude. So I didn't see if she had like spent time at altitude or was like using a tent at home or something. So yeah, I think that could probably play out to how she'll hold up. But she's definitely like pretty durable over longer distances, so that shouldn't be an issue.
I got to add two more points. So in May, she did Ultra Trail Snowdonia. So that the 165K race, got third place there. And a week after Hard Rock, she's lining up for the Tahoe 200. So adding more to her legend, she's just incredibly prolific. That's wild.
Trying to get the most out of her plane tickets to the US, I guess.
Do you think, and I think maybe the central question for me as we talk about Claire and Anne-Lise and Annie Hughes, other folks in the race, is, can any of these runners challenge Courtney? And is Courtney vulnerable because of this quick turnaround from Western States? Like, do you see Claire as a contender in this race? Like, what are your thoughts there?
I mean, personally, I think the top contender would be Anne-Lise. Anne-Lise has already raced Courtney at Diagonal des Fous last year. And I mean, Courtney had an absolutely phenomenal day there, which I wish I could say is like, you know, unique, but you know, that's standard for Courtney. So yeah, I think Anne-Lise will probably be the closest to her. For me, it's the altitude is really going to be a thing. And we just do not have these altitudes in France where you can go like run during the year. Anne-Lise has been in the area for a few weeks now, and she was trying to do a little bit of staying around 2000 meters before leaving. But I mean, Courtney lives at 3000 the whole year. So that's just like a huge, huge advantage just to start out with. Plus she's Courtney. Yeah. I mean, I'm not feeling so hot after Western States right now, but yeah, that's me. So we'll see.
I was going to ask, like, could you see yourself lining up for Hard Rock?
No, absolutely not. But I also don't have as much experience in the sport as Courtney. So maybe it's something that changes. I would say the like 12-hour flight and 9-hour time zone change didn't help my situation. So maybe I would feel a little bit better if I was still there.
But yeah, Anlis, you mentioned it, second place at last year's Diagonale des Fous, has the speed record, the current speed record on the GR20, and then spent 3 weeks in the San Juans in the lead up to this race. And I think, you know, going back to the top of our conversation, the increasing frequency of both American athletes and European athletes heading over to the very specific race domains to prepare well ahead of time. I'm optimistic, just given how much time she spent on the course, that yeah, she could be in for a great day. You could see her as a contender in this race, like, you know, going for the win.
I think it's always hard when Courtney's on the start line. It's hard to bet against her, but if anyone is going to give her any push from behind, it's going to be Anlis, and maybe they'll be running together a bit at the beginning. I have no idea. But yeah, for sure, Anlis has committed quite a bit to this race. She and her husband, who's the coach of the French team, and her stepson and her son are there in Colorado. She has, based on what I saw in Strava, she has friends from the Scott team who are there, who I imagine are going to help with aid stations and pacing her, and maybe some childcare if her husband's going to pace her a little bit. So it seems like she's got a good team around her, which is great. And she's definitely been training for it. Like, I saw she was in Val d'Isère, which is at 2000 meters. She was there for, I don't know, 4 days before leaving. So she's definitely had it in her head how she wants to prepare best as she can. So yeah, I think she'll be able to put out a good day. I have some confidence in her. I think she's going to have a good day.
On the men's side, a couple names to highlight: Benoit, Marmisol, Aurelien Dunand, Palaz, and Javier Dominguez. Where do you want to start there? Who should we talk about first?
I want to start with Javier because I was really excited when I saw his name on the list. I didn't even know he was going to be there because he has almost no social media. And by almost no, I mean he has no social media. So the reason I know him quite well is because he and Jamal they finished UTMB together in 2019. They ran the last 100 kilometers of the race together and tied for ninth. So I am like very familiar with him because of that story. But he's a Basque. He's Basque, so he's from the region where Zegama is. So also the same region as Maite Mayora, who we talked about last time. So same region. He has a ton of results. He's been in the sport forever. I just listened to an interview with him on a Spanish TV network, which I had auto-translated into English. I don't speak Spanish. But he was talking a lot about what a huge financial investment it is to go to this race, but that it's something he's always dreamed of, and it's something that he felt was worth this investment. And yeah, I think that kind of goes back to that point of like how much of an investment it is for these athletes to go to a place like Silverton, you know, and which isn't, you can't get like a small apartment rental in Silverton, Colorado. You know, there's a lot of investment to be made there. So seeing him come from Basque country, the last time I met him, he spoke zero English, so I don't know if he's going to be traveling with someone to help him, or maybe he speaks more English now. I'm not sure, but he's a really great guy, and I'll definitely be cheering for him. I mean, he's my fan favorite.
Awesome insights, yeah. And if the link to that interview is on the interwebs, we can add it to the show notes, and people can either translate it, or if we have any Spanish speakers in the audience, they can just watch it straight up. But that's super cool, and yeah, further emphasizing the commitment to get over here and to take care of the logistics and stuff, that's super impressive. How about Aurelien? Maybe we should talk about this Instagram video that you sent me earlier today, because I was cracking up.
Yeah, so Aurelien is from really close to Annecy. So a lot of people know Annecy. And yeah, he's had some really fantastic results over the last few years. He was second at UTMB behind Francois in 2021. 2021. He was second at UTMB behind Francois.
Okay.
Yeah, he does quite a bit of skiing in the winter. He's faced some like reasonably serious injuries in the on and off. So that's kind of, if you see any holes in his results, that's what that's from. Yeah, he was supposed to do Diagonal des Fous last year and had to not start because of a hip injury. And he was supposed to be at Hard Rock last year, but his wife was pregnant and he had a son like at this time last year. So his son is now 1 year old. So that's exciting. He's coming here as a new dad. And he has been, yeah, I've been following his training on Strava, just to see like what he's been up to. He's been doing quite a bit of biking at home because he's been using an altitude tent and like a hypoxic mask on the home trainer. So he's definitely like also kind of going all in for this, like making sure he's ready for the altitude. I think he just got to Silverton like a few days ago. Not sure, maybe a week ago. But he said he was in the, okay. I think he was sleeping in his altitude tent for like 5 weeks. So hopefully that gives him like a head start on being more used to it. But yeah, so the video that I sent you, which I actually have to give credit to Jarmo because he pointed out to me, because I often don't listen to like Instagram stories with the sound on, but he was like, oh, you have to watch Orleans stories. Like, it's super funny. So he's filming, I guess, in the middle of his recon run, he came across Arlen Glick, who I think is from Ohio. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ohio. So yeah. So maybe not as mountainous as Annecy, France. And Orléans is filming him trying to go down this like snow slope. And he looks at the cameras and he says in French, like, well, the Americans aren't that comfortable in the snow, it looks like. And Arlen is like really struggling to find some grip in the snow, which is just, yeah, it's just a funny video. So he'll definitely have an advantage in the snow. That won't be an issue for him.
Couple more things about Orléans that I want to point out, and this is actually maybe can be extended to a lot of the athletes in this field, but like if you go to the UTMB index page for Orléans, he doesn't just have sponsors, he also represents a club. So his club is Courchevel Sport Outdoor, and that's not really something that we have here in the US. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but can you speak to that at all? Like the distinction between representing a club and then having sponsors, like he runs for Scarpa and Compress Sport, but also has this club affiliation.
There could be two things here. Either he's sponsored by Courchevel, which is a ski resort, which is not that uncommon. I'm sponsored by a ski resort also. So a lot of athletes who like live close to or in ski resorts have some type of partnership with the resort. Well, they're like, help them develop their trail running or just be present at whatever the local race is. Yeah. And that can vary. Maybe you also see athletes who maybe don't live where the resort is, but are sponsored by the resort. And then we'll do like a couple training camps in the resort and tag them, you know, while they're at the training camp, and the resort will give them like an apartment for those weeks that they come. So it could be something like that. I think he is sponsored by Courchevel if I'm remembering correctly, but it can also be in France to have, to run in a lot of events, you have to be licensed at a club. And this is true in skiing also. So you have to take a running license. Like I am part of the club in Nice, and that's where my license is based. And that like provides your insurance for racing. So like when I sign up for UTMB, for example, I don't upload a medical certificate. I just reference my French license number, which is related to my club. Gotcha. And that has my like all my insurance related to it already. So I don't think Courchevel is an athletic club. So I think that he's sponsored by them, or it could also be his Skimo club, because then you need a different club for Skimo. So like I have a different club for Skimo, but this is how the French system works.
I don't mean to go too far off on a tangent. I just find this so fascinating. So you can be sponsored by a ski resort. Like that'd be like, so I'm here in Salt Lake City. I know you're familiar with the area. That'd be like getting in contact with Snowbird or Alta or Brighton or Solitude and somehow working out a way to work together. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's the ski resort sponsoring you. And I think where it comes from, really comes from skiing and snow sports. You'll see if you watch like the World Cup skiing, you know, they all, not everyone, but a lot of people have like a resort across their helmet or somewhere printed on them. And yeah, it gives TV visibility to the resort. And they saw that it could also, once the resort saw that you, that the resort is still profitable in the summer, that you can still get quite a bit of tourism from people coming for mountain biking or hiking or now trail running. They see that it is important to have like a presence in trail running. But yeah, there's quite a few French athletes who are sponsored by resorts, and you see it more in Skimo. But I just saw Lucy Germain, who's a French runner. She just announced a partnership with it's a resort called the Three Valleys in French. So yeah, you see that.
Super cool. Well, to say one more thing about the hard rock conditions and building off that video that Orléans got of Arlen, I pulled up Dylan Bowman's Strava, and Dylan is running hard rock this coming weekend. And he did a run from Ice Lakes to Telluride on the course. And in the description, he said, hyper sketchy, snowy, exhausting conditions, borderline dangerous. Hard rock is going to be crazy hard this year. So, gosh, it just makes me wonder, like, these people that are just, is this going to be less a race of fitness and mountain ability and more just like who is the most daring and comfortable on snow and ice and just this type of terrain? It's going to be wild.
It's funny because I should attribute all of this to Charmel. He should really be taking my place. He said that he showed me the same thing this morning. He's like, look, Dylan's like freaking out and Orléans like taking, you know, stories making fun of the Americans. So yeah, I think that's two sides of the same story. I will say that, like, for example, at Western States, I personally found the snow to be like not a big deal at all. Like, had zero issue. Didn't think it lasted that long. Like, really have nothing to say about the snow. And then I've heard other people saying that it was like totally crazy, just really threw off their race. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I think there's a point where like I don't realize that I'm as comfortable in something in the snow than I am. And maybe that's something the same with Orléans. He's just like, I don't even understand how they can like think that this is crazy because this is normal. So yeah, everyone has their own gauge, right, of like what they're used to. Yeah, and it just what they're used to running in. I mean, I don't particularly run in the snow, but I think just being a confident, like, technical runner, which Orléans is, that will definitely like play to his favor, even if it's not the snow that he's used to, just, you know, being able to deal with different conditions and different surfaces.
Well, this has been an awesome conversation, Katie. Always great to chat. Any final thoughts on the Hard Rock race, any of the athletes in it, or just any other upcoming races we should briefly touch on before departing here?
I mean, I'll quickly say like Benyat Marmisol, he's definitely like on the list for a win there. He arrived in Silverton the beginning of June. So I think he definitely got there the earliest of all the Europeans we covered. So he's got a good shot. As I said, I think the altitude's going to be a major player, especially because we just do not have those elevations here. And he had some really strong results last year. He's also from the Basque region close to Javier, but on the French side. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the men's race plays out and how Annelise likes the U.S. I'll be interested to talk to her when she gets back.
There will be a live stream too, by the way. So Aravipa Running is putting on the live stream for Hard Rock this year. We'll link to it in the show notes if you want to get live footage of what's happening out on the course, maybe capturing some of the conditions we're describing here. That will be available. We'll link to it. I think the one last thing I'll say, because we are recording this right in the middle of the Val d'Orane by UTMB race festival, which you have experience with, Katie. This is interesting. So the 55K just happened and the Spaniards swept the podium on both sides in the 55K. So Spaniards sweep on the men's side, Spaniards sweep on the women's side. that's impressive to me, especially when we were just talking about the Trail World Championships and there was a bit more diversity in the standings. That's very impressive. I don't know if that's just a race that's typically well represented by that country, but that stands out to me.
Yeah, it's a newer race actually. So I think it's only a few years old. But yeah, it's in Spain. So that obviously is like a huge part of that. It's easier for Spaniards to get there than anyone else. Yeah. But yeah, it's very technical. Actually, it's quite a technical course. So I think it just plays to some of those Spanish runners. I guess there was a lot of the French runners who would maybe do a 50K were for sure at the Marathon du Mont Blanc, I guess 2 weeks ago now. So yeah, I think it just plays to like who was where at what time.
One last bit of news before we go. If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you know that throughout 2022, we had a weekly newsletter summarizing all of the interesting happenings and figurative water cooler talk across the ultra trail running landscape. And we have some interesting news to share on this front. We will be restarting the newsletter later this month via our Patreon page. It will come out at least 2 times a month, maybe more. The first edition will be free to consume. After that, it will be $5 a month, which is a great way to support the show directly. So be on the lookout for that first edition launching later this month. We'll make sure to mention it on the show as well as across our social channels. If you do want to check out that Patreon page in the meantime, head to patreon.com/run-singletrack. And thanks for checking it out and considering a monthly donation. And as always, thank you so much for listening.